Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettor's Box of BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, June 20th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettor's Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTV, and the number 200 is that promo code, 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettor's Box. As you know, I will be recording a UFC podcast today or tomorrow morning with Christian Pina. So we'll be talking about this weekend's UFC event. So keep an eye out for that. We'll try to do some more things here in the coming weeks with football and all that type of stuff as well. But for now, as you know, the Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettor's Box. After the weekend, we'll have another Monday mailbag at Skating Tripods on Twitter or adam@bangthebook.com via email. If you want to send me questions for that Monday mailbag, also adam@bangthebook.com via email to get the notes for the shows here. A lot of numbers, a lot of stats, a lot of different nuggets that I talk about here on the program. So those notes will be good for you, whether you follow along while listening or you just sort of cycle back through those after checking out the latest edition of the show. My MLB picks and tips piece updated over at bangthebook.com on a daily basis. 30 NFL win totals have been posted. Still waiting on a couple more from our writers. Those should be coming here today or tomorrow. So we'll have all 32 teams posted with our NFL season win total previews. We'll be starting college football here as soon as we can. Of course, those that follow me on Twitter, at Skating Tripods, saw that we're looking for writers over at bangthebook.com. So if you're interested, shoot me an email, adam@bangthebook.com. If you do send me an email, please provide a writing sample. Hopefully you've been published somewhere. If you haven't, put something together, send it over to me. Again, adam@bangthebook.com. Looking primarily for college football, NBA, and college basketball writers at this time. But if you feel like you can put a fresh spin on any of the other sports betting markets that are out there, we'd be happy to hear from you. So we are looking for writers. This will be a paid per article position. So again, adam@bangthebook.com via email if you want to throw your hat in the ring for that. All right, so we got the format here, our regular format for the Thursday show. We go beyond the box score, down the lines, couple picks for tonight's action, and then preview of the weekend, five series previews coming your way here for this weekend on today's edition of the show. All right, so we take a look here beyond the box score. And how about the Cincinnati Reds? They sweep the Houston Astros here. 3-1-run victories for the Reds in this series, and maybe a little bit of positive regression here for Cincinnati. They are -7 in Pythagorean win-loss record. They are a 34-38 team, but based on Pythagorean win-loss, an alternate standings metric derived from run differential, they should be a 41-31 team. They're outscoring opponents on the year 4.3 to 3.7 per game on average. Only the Rays and the Dodgers allowing fewer runs per game than the Reds. Phenomenal job being done by Derek Johnson. He was the pitching coach last year of the Milwaukee Brewers, this year with the Cincinnati Reds. And it was a testament to what they've done here this season in that Houston had 9 extra base hits in the 3 games of this series in a phenomenal hitter's park. So the Reds pitching staff has just been exceptional. And you know what? They really battled in this series. Luis Castillo walked 6 in game 1, pitched around it, only gave up 2 runs. They wind up prevailing 3-2 in that game. You had, Wade Miley going in that first one there against Castillo. And, look, they didn't scratch out a whole lot of offense, and that's been a problem for the Reds this season, but did draw 4 walks, did knock him out of the game a little bit early on. This is an Astros bullpen where Ryan Pressly and Roberto Osuna have thrown a lot of innings here so far this season. So Castillo gives them some length. They do just enough off of Miley in the bullpen. Then in game 2, Anthony DeSclafani was actually better than Justin Verlander. Verlander did strike out 8 more guys, but gave up 3 more home runs. The solo home runs that Verlander has allowed this year, absolutely incredible. Did give up a 2-run shot to Derek Dietrich in the first inning of that game. But DeSclafani, a guy with significant platoon split issues against left-handed batters, now with a couple of good starts here against the Indians and the Astros. So, maybe Johnson working some of his magic there with him. Then you can't say enough about Tyler Mahle. And, Tyler Mahle, another guy, very good against righties, has some platoon split issues. But he goes toe-to-toe with Garrett Cole to give his team a chance in that final game in the series. The bullpen does hold out. They eventually prevail, getting that walk-off win. Incredible performance by the Reds starting pitchers here in this series, and really by the Reds starting pitchers overall this season. And Tanner Roark, the guy going tonight against the Brewers, has been very, very good. Sonny Gray, a career resurgence for him. Derek Johnson doing some exceptional work here for the Reds. We'll talk a little bit more about them later on in the program. Speaking of the Brewers, they got swept by the San Diego Padres here early on in the week. Ulys Chacin was better in game one, but just too many deep counts. In game two, Brandon Woodruff fell victim to the third time through penalty. Then in game three, Zach Davies, with some of that regression we've all kind of been waiting for, he actually got knocked around quite a bit in that start yesterday. And, you know, look for the Padres here. Matt Strom was not good in game three. He's really struggled since coming back from injury. But Joey Lucchesi and Logan Allen, both very, very good. Two changeup-oriented guys. And you know, that's kind of an important thing here. Lucchesi, you know, really fastball changeup, does mix in a slider curveball a little bit. But Logan Allen had great success with that changeup against Milwaukee. And you know, you see organizations developing certain things in their own ways. Obviously, for the Yankees here, you know, they're completely avoiding fastballs with a lot of their guys. Fastball usage in the 35 to 40% range. You know, we see teams adding cutters. You know, the Astros and Wade Miley, a lot of emphasis with the cutter. Same thing with kind of a cutter slider for Colin McHugh, a pitch that was really, really effective for him last season. Garrett Cole kind of throwing a little bit more of a cut fastball as well. We see teams doing these different things, and maybe for the Padres, it's the changeup. Lucchesi's got a good one. Logan Allen's got a good one. Matt Strom usually has a very good one. Chris Paddock has a good one. That's kind of their bread and butter here, and it worked out really well for them against the Brewers, and it really has worked out well for them over the course of this season as a whole. So when you see teams that don't hit changeups well, you can go check that information out at Baseball Savant in that search page. You see teams that don't hit changeups well, those are teams that are going to struggle against the Padres. And we see these organizational philosophies playing out for a lot of ball clubs these days. And right now it looks like the Padres are going all in with changeups, and it was a big help for them here in this series against the Brewers. You know, when you look at the Brewers here, Adrian Hauser's pitched very well in relief. You kind of wonder how much longer that leash is for a guy like Chacin. Maybe they start to look more at openers and piggybacks with guys like Freddie Peralta, Adrian Hauser, some other multi-inning relief options that they do have. You know, Woodruff struggling here wasn't a great thing, but you know, this Brewers team, Woodruff's been very good. Chacin has not. Davies has overachieved. This is a Brewers team that may need to get creative here as Zach Davies comes back to earth. Chase Anderson's not an overly reliable guy. Are they a player for somebody like a Trevor Bauer? Are they a player for somebody like Madison Bumgarner? You know, we saw them pick up Gio Gonzalez last year with a waiver deal. Maybe the Brewers are very active here in terms of, you know, trying to acquire some starting pitcher help. But I think you've got to look at guys like Hauser and Peralta and see if they can maximize their value a little bit more than they have here so far. You know, for the Padres here offensively in this series, Manny Machado showing signs of life. Franmil Reyes, the big three-run homer in yesterday's game, he's got 20 already. Look, they'll hit average command, average velocity, but they get overpowered very easily. And that's an angle that we've played a lot here from a first five standpoint. You know, Chacin can't overpower you. Zach Davies can't overpower you. They'll hit guys like that. I'm a little bit surprised that they touched up Brandon Woodruff the third time through, but obviously the first two times through, he was very, very good, had worked shutout baseball for four innings. That's what happens with the Padres here. You know, if you're below average, they can get around on you. They can get to you. If you're above average to elite, they have a lot of problems in those splits. So, you know, the Padres is really a very cut and dry team from a handicapping standpoint this season. We don't have a whole lot of those to talk about here league-wide. It's been a pretty strange season overall in a lot of different ways, but the Padres, very cut and dry, very what you see is what you get. I think we can continue to have success with a team like that as this season goes along. The Boston Red Sox were two blown saves away from a sweep of the Minnesota Twins. Rick Porcello outdueled Jose Berríos in the first game, 2-0 win for the Red Sox there. Brandon Workman and Hector Velasquez both blowing saves in the middle game. where David Price left after five innings. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then that game winds up going 17 innings. Workman gave up his run in the eighth. Velasquez gave up his run in the 13th. We were on the Red Sox in that game. Obviously could have gone a little bit better for us. But then in game three, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez wasn't great, but the offense bailed him out. They bailed us out with three runs in the fifth for that first five winner. But the Twins only scored eight runs in this three-game series and really almost played a four-game series with that 17-inning game in the middle. So the Twins are a very good offense, but they've been on an historic pace in the slugging percentage department, and they've really padded their numbers against a very, very awful schedule. What happens when they step up in class? Well, maybe we kind of saw it a little bit here in this series. They lose two out of three. They don't do very much offensively. They're lucky Michael Pineda pitched as well as he did in the middle game. Otherwise, they definitely would have gotten swept. So they get the Royals here this weekend, so they do fall back against a lower-class opponent. But when the Twins step up in class here, they might not be there just yet. You know, Barrios was very good. Pineda was good. Kyle Gibson was not. Jake Odorizzi goes tonight against the Royals. Martin Perez, the best guy in baseball this year from an exit velocity standpoint. Maybe they can hang, but it sort of feels like they need to graduate to that level where they can beat these upper echelon teams. Didn't do it with Boston here in this series. We'll see what they do when they go forward stepping up in class. But you know, I thought that this series kind of played out the way I sort of expected it to, in the sense that the Red Sox did win the series. Hopefully you had a series price ticket there, and that one wasn't the order that I anticipated, but the Twins regressing a little bit was something that I definitely saw. Now, the David Price thing is weird. David Price only lasted an inning and a third in his previous start, did not pitch well, only went five innings here and got pulled after 73 pitches. Now, you got seven innings from Rick Porcello in game one. So I guess I understand Alex Cora erring on the side of caution, protecting David Price a little bit. But you couldn't push him through a sixth inning when he was so efficient through the first five. Seems weird to me. I don't know if there's something under the hood, something under the surface, if he's just trying to protect him here because, you know, Price did have some arm issues in the second half of last season. But what happened is that he wound up putting 11 in a third innings on his pitching staff. And obviously you don't anticipate that. You don't expect the game going 17 innings. But keep an eye out for this because the Red Sox have some guys pitching in high leverage that don't normally do it, that haven't really done it that much up until this year. This bullpen has been a pleasant surprise. It has been very good, but I think Boston needs some reinforcements here, largely from a depth standpoint. So we'll see if this bullpen can hold up its end of the bargain as we go forward here, but you certainly want to look for a little bit of attrition over the next couple of weeks with some of that heavier workload, with Price leaving early, with Porcello being inconsistent. You know, with Chris Sale, still not fully looking like the Chris Sale we all know and appreciate. Keep an eye out for that with Boston. Whether you do it from a live betting standpoint, an over standpoint, a team total over against standpoint, something like that, keep an eye out for this bullpen. A lot of guys working a lot in high-stress situations that aren't necessarily used to it. So that's something I'd be keeping a very close eye on with the Boston Red Sox here as we go forward. Just a handful of bullet points here to finish up the Beyond the Box Score segment. The Rockies offense staying hot, 14 runs in the two games against the Diamondbacks for them. But Trevor Story now going for an MRI on his thumb. Ian Desmond's been great since May 1st. Daniel Murphy's hitting. Charlie Blackman's hitting. Keep an eye on that Story thing because he hurts them offensively and defensively if he's not out there. But this Rockies offense has stayed hot. And maybe a commentary on the Diamondbacks as well. I think they've overachieved on the pitching side a fair amount here so far this season. I do not trust their bullpen at all whatsoever at this point in time. But the Rockies, you know, a big story here with their offense coming around. And, you know, they probably need it with some of the pitching concerns that they have. The Cardinals offense, man, are they in the tank. Shut down by Eliezer Hernandez, Jordan Yamamoto, and then Trevor Richards. We'll see if they hit Zach Gallen today, making his major league debut. But they don't hit right-handed starters well. They've kind of become like the Padres in that regard, especially if you've got a breaking ball. Yamamoto really shutting them down with the curveball. Richards has that changeup. If you've got a plus off-speed pitch or a breaking ball and you're right-handed, the Cardinals have had a lot of problems with you over the last six, 7 weeks here. So definitely something to watch, much like what we talked about with the Padres, much like what we talked about with the Indians and guys that throw changeups. If you've got a plus or a plus-plus off-speed or breaking ball from a right-handed arm slot and you're facing the Cardinals, you could have success in those matchups. So may look to prey on that a little bit more here as we go forward. Rich Hill leaving hurt for the Dodgers after one inning yesterday. Essentially back-to-back bullpen games now for the Dodgers. The Julio Urias, Caleb Ferguson piggyback tonight. Eight innings from the bullpen yesterday. Hill took himself out of that game. So we'll see if it's a blister issue or something else. But obviously the Dodgers, the deepest team in baseball all the way around here so far this season. But you'd certainly like to see Rich Hill having some better health fortunes. Speaking of injuries, Jose Altuve back for the Astros. Giancarlo Stanton back for the Yankees. Aaron Judge back for the Yankees tomorrow. Those two teams, ironically enough, face each other this weekend. Watch for the line adjustments. I've talked about a lot of instances where a player's out of the lineup from an injury standpoint, and we see a line move against that team because the modeling crowd feels like the oddsmakers haven't properly put that injury into the line. Now let's see what happens as guys come back. I think it's interesting because I don't think that they account for a player leaving as much as they should, and I think they overvalue a player coming back. So let's see what it looks like here in this series between the Astros and the Yankees, because a lot of people believe that the Yankees at full strength, you know, 1A to the Astros in the American League. Looks like tonight's line was a little bit high with Framber Valdez and Chad Green, but I'm really curious to see what happens here as Aaron Judge gets back in the lineup. And of course, too, keep in mind, while these guys are important hitters to get back, it may take some time for them to get their timing down, for them to get reacclimated to facing major league pitching, because there's nothing like it. No rehab assignment can prepare you for what you're going to see at the big league level. So some of these guys may struggle early on coming out of the gate. One other quick thing I want to touch on here beyond the box score, and we'll finish this up. The Indians offense really coming alive. They got shut down by Lance Lynn in game one. He's second in F-WAR, Fangraphs' calculation of WAR for this season, which is absolutely mind-blowing. But big efforts the last 2 days for the Indians offense. Zach Plesac pitching well in a tough road environment. Adam Plutko, not great in his 4 1/3, but you obviously did pitch with a little bit of a lead there. But regression from this Rangers offense is something I've talked about quite a bit here since Joey Gallo went down, and really over the last 4 or 5 weeks for this Rangers ball club. So keep an eye out for that. I think the starting pitching is greatly overachieving, and I think the offense is going to become more of a concern as we move forward here. So keep an eye out for the Rangers, probably a pretty good fade team as we go forward here. All right, so let's go down the line, talk about some line moves dating back to Monday. Really not a whole lot on Monday. There wound up being a big move on the Mets that stuck around in the Zach Wheeler versus Mike Soroka matchup. The Braves did win, but it's been very rare to see significant line moves that don't come back at all. That was one of them. And there have been a few here this week of 35, 40 cent line moves that haven't come back. We've seen a lot of scraping and scalping out there in the marketplace of lines moving 15, 20 cents at open, then they come back 10 or 15 cents over the course of the day. Well, there have been some line moves here this week that have actually stuck, where the line just hasn't come back. Those are games you really want to pay close attention to, because the expectation would be that those pitchers and those pitching matchups, we're going to see continued fades or money on those guys. Wheeler looks like a buy guy right now, and Soroka looks like a fade guy. So you definitely want to watch for those things out there in the betting markets. We also saw a big move on Patrick Corbin that stuck around, but that game was postponed on Monday night. Tuesday, we saw some heavy Jacob DeGrom money on the Mets against the Braves. I would expect that fade of Julio Teheran to continue. Teheran's pitched very, very well over his last 6 or 7 starts, but unsustainably well at that. Very low BABIPs, very high left on base percentages. It's not expected to continue for him. So the market's going to fade Julio Teheran probably over his next 3 or 4 starts, I would say, unless he has one of those big stink bombs, gives up 9 runs, something like that, that sort of puts those numbers back into his usual range. But look for money against Julio Teheran here this weekend in his start, and then also over his next few starts. Very heavy Jack Flaherty money came in against the Marlins and Jordan Yamamoto. Yamamoto dominated the Cardinals lineup once again, doing the exact same thing he did in his first major league start. Flaherty was not great, but he was a little bit better, but still a guy that just hasn't been able to put it all together here so far this season. Saw some pretty substantial Merrill Kelly money come in against the Rockies and Antonio Senzatella. Senzatella is a fade guy. He allows a lot of hard contact. The expectation was that the Diamondbacks would take advantage there, but they didn't. They lost that game 8-1. Merrill Kelly, a guy that allows a lot of hard contact as well. I think part of that was a fade of the Rockies and the historic offensive weekend they had against the Padres. They've happened to keep it going here, but I do think that the Rockies are probably a fade team market-wise going forward because people will start to play against that offense and the numbers that they've been putting up here recently. Again, look for these little week-long things in Major League Baseball where you get a really significant outlier, you know, a team that goes on a tear with runners in the scoring position, scores a ton of runs. The market will play against that. They'll play against that perception. They'll play against those line adjustments. Seems like we kind of have that a little bit here with the Rockies, who also were faded in today's game with Jeff Hoffman going up against Robbie Ray. Saw some pretty heavy Brandon Woodruff money in that game against the Padres and Logan Allen. That backfired. I think the move made sense. We had the Brewers first five on the run line. They wound up getting shut out, lost that first five 2-0. But, you know, the Brandon Woodruff money made a lot of sense in that spot, in that series against the Padres. The Brewers just didn't give him any offensive help, and the third time through kind of caught up with him. Another one of those big line moves that held steady, heavy money on Jay Happ and the Yankees against Ryan Stanek and the Tampa Bay Rays. I think the Yankees will get steamed a lot here. As I mentioned, with Stanton and Judge coming back, the expectation here that, you know, this Yankees team at full strength deserves to be a big favorite in a lot of its games. I agree with that sentiment, and I think we will see Yankees money pretty regularly here over the next little while. Maybe not this weekend against Houston, who's obviously still a very good team, but when they take on some lesser opponents or some regression candidates, heavy Yankees money is my expectation in the marketplace. David Price took some pretty big Red Sox money on Tuesday in that start against the Twins. We had the CLV, just not the result. Curious to see what David Price's line action looks like in his next start, because getting pulled after five innings is a big red flag. A lot of people were on that game. A lot of people were following that game, saw what happened in that game. Will we see the same love for David Price in his next start? I highly doubt it, but obviously we'll have to see who the opponent is and how things are kind of playing out there. Heavy Yusei Kikuchi money for the Mariners against the Kansas City Royals and Homer Bailey. The Royals are awful against lefties, but did manage to take 2 out of 3 in that series there against the Mariners. So my apologies if you took the series price on Seattle. Probably got some line value there with some of the line moves in that series, but you know, the Mariners only able to salvage Wednesday's game. Very heavy fade of Daniel Norris returned on Tuesday. And you know, I talked about this with Daniel Norris against the Royals and Danny Duffy, in that we didn't see that move against Norris. They wound up winning that game and he pitched pretty well. Here, the Tigers did win that game, but money against Daniel Norris and pretty substantially at that. So again, keep in mind that these guys that get faded all the time and then all of a sudden there's no line move or there's a line move on them, those are games that you probably want to pay very close attention to. Wednesday, we saw very heavy Max Scherzer money against Jake Arrieta. Hardly surprising there in the doubleheader. We saw some pretty heavy Zach Greinke money as well against the Rockies. Again, the market looking to fade the Rockies offense off of that historic week. We eventually saw some Blake Snell money in his start against CC Sabathia and the Yankees. Wasn't very much, though. And Sabathia is a guy that the market has faded quite a bit over the last 18 months or so, but that's been on hold over his last two starts. Now, Blake Snell didn't make it out of the first inning. And I talked about this in my write-up at bangthebook.com yesterday, that there must be something more to this because we've seen a lot of Blake Snell money come in over the last little while. Hasn't happened in his last two starts. So I dug a little bit deeper. And I mentioned I was going to try to look at this on Twitter. I will include this in the article prior to Snell's next start. Blake Snell didn't make out of the first inning in that start. Since May 1st, the spin rate on Snell's curveball, 2,438 RPM. It was 2,570 RPM from the start of the season to April 30th. Now, he did miss some time. Something fell on his foot. He broke his toe. Since coming back, I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if it's a mechanical issue. But it's one of those things where, and I've talked about this before, when guys get hurt in April, you know, they do all this work in spring training, all this stuff to build their arms up in the month of April, then they get hurt, kind of throws you off a little bit. But as we look at Blake Snell here, since the start of June, the spin rate on his curveball, 2,333 RPM. So in the first month of the season, it was 2,570. It's 2,333 over his last 97 curveballs. There is something wrong here. And I wrote about this on Monday with regards to Patrick Corbin and the decrease in his spin rates as well. One of the most immediate injury indicators is a drop in spin rate. So maybe this is mechanical for Snell. Maybe there's something that hurts that he's, you know, changed his mechanics to try and throw with as little pain as possible. I think Blake Snell is hurt. I think Patrick Corbin is hurt, despite the good start that he had yesterday. But spin rate is a pretty good indicator of injury. And for Blake Snell, it's down dramatically on his curveball. It's also down on his fastball. 2384 RPM in March and April, 2371 in May, 2314 here in June. Something is wrong with Blake Snell. Now, I don't know what the line action will look like going into his next start, but I can tell you that I'll probably look to fade him, whether it's an over or going against him, because there's some sort of injury indicator here. And when you talk about pitching with an injury, you talk about a substantial decrease in command. And that has been the case for Blake Snell over his last few starts. Now, obviously, we'll see if the Rays are proactive and put him on the IL, but this big spin rate decrease is a major red flag to me. It's a red flag with Corbin. It's a red flag with Snell. And I'll try and see if there are some other guys that are out there. You know, obviously, again, you want to look at the results and see how these guys have fared, then see if it is a spin rate issue or if it's something else. But Blake Snell right now looks like a guy that you absolutely positively want to avoid or want to look to go against. Very heavy Angels money came in on Wednesday on Andrew Heaney. Once again, a lot of line moves on Andrew Heaney. This one was against Aaron Sanchez and the Toronto Blue Jays. Saw Gerrit Cole money, lather, rinse, repeat. We see Gerrit Cole money every time he takes the mound. Very, very heavy money on Trevor Williams against Jordan Zimmermann. The Tigers have a very right-handed heavy lineup. Williams dominates those, but both of those guys were coming off of prolonged stints on the injured list. Very surprised to see that line shoot up the way that it did. The Pirates did ultimately win the game, but Trevor Williams was awful, got hit around very early in that one. So a bit of a lucky, maybe wrong side winner for Pirates backers there, but that was one with a substantial line move. We saw Patrick Corbin take money against Jake Arrieta in the two postponed games. Then we saw Zach Eflin take money in the game that was actually played. So a lot of Arrieta fades out there. Keep an eye out for that. But again, I documented those Patrick Corbin concerns earlier on in the week. Exit velocity up, spin rates down, not a whole lot of command now for Patrick Corbin, but did pitch well enough in yesterday's game to come away with that victory. Thursday, we're seeing money on Nick Pivetta and the Phillies against Eric Fetty and the Nationals. I fully expected this. I waited until this line went down and did decide to take the Nationals here. Offensively, they've been much, much better than the Phillies. Pivetta, a guy that has underachieved relative to preseason expectations. Fetty's not great. He's a regression candidate, but I'll buy on the Nationals offense here in tonight's game. But that was a substantial line mover. Pivetta, ERA to xFIP discrepancy. Same thing for Fetty on the negative regression side. So we see that line move there. See a fade of Shane Bieber today against Mike Minor and the Rangers. A lot of anti-Mike Minor sentiment out there in the marketplace. That's been put on hold today. A lot of hard contact against for Shane Bieber. Big article from Eno Saris at The Athletic today about Bieber. Again, when you see these guys that the market's betting against all of a sudden take money, should sound those alarm bells in your head. Jake Odorizzi taking a lot of money here today for the Twins. They're back playing stiffs. They take on the Royals in Kansas City. Royals off that trip against the Mariners. Had some long travel out to the Pacific Northwest as well prior to that series. but Odorizzi now up into the $2 range as a very heavy favorite against Glenn Sparkman, who is an ex-Wilbur regression candidate. All right, along with that Nationals pick here, also look at the first five under in the Rays and A's. Get this one as quick as you can. I think it was four this morning. I think it closes 3.5. Long road trip here for the Rays off that Yankees series. I don't expect anything from them offensively against a very tough customer in Frankie Montas. And then Charlie Morton goes for the Rays tonight. He dominates right-handed batters. The A's have a lot of right-handed batters. So under four for the first five. If it gets down to 3.5, I obviously don't like it as much. 3.5 plus money is okay. 3.5 minus 05, I don't love as much. So get this one as early as you can, because I think this total comes down to 7 and the first five down to 3.5. If it hasn't already, I've been doing the show and doing the notes, so I haven't checked on that one. But, I would expect both of these offenses to struggle. If it goes down to 3.5, the full game under 7 makes some sense here for you as well. All right, so what am I looking at here for this weekend? Well, the Astros and the Yankees. Framber Valdez and Chad Green tonight. Chad Green, the opener. Nestor Cortez, the bulk reliever. Friday, Brad Peacock and Brad Paxton. Saturday, Wade Miley and Masahiro Tanaka. Sunday, Justin Verlander and Jay Happ. I don't know how this isn't Sunday Night Baseball. That is instead the Angels and the Cardinals. But Aaron Judge back tomorrow. Jose Altuve back. Giancarlo Stanton back. Should be a great series here. Two elite bullpens. I expect we see Masahiro Tanaka money on Saturday, righty against a right-handed heavy lineup. Fade of Wade Miley has been a pretty regular thing out there in the marketplace. And I would expect the total to move up on Sunday as well with Justin Verlander and his home run issues against Jay Happ and all the problems that he's had at Yankee Stadium. Angels and the Cardinals here for some interleague action. Griffin Canning, Michael Wacha Friday. Felix Pena is listed as the starter for Saturday. I think we probably get an opener here against Dakota Hudson. And then Tyler Skaggs and Miles Mikolas on Sunday. Again, this is Sunday Night Baseball. But both teams off on Monday, so no situational spots. I'm kind of curious to see how Dakota Hudson is handled on Saturday. Obviously, the opener could throw a wrench into this game. But, he's pitching very well. But he's not a guy that the market has a lot of respect for. So I'm very curious to see how that line moves on Saturday. I do think the line moves on Friday on Griffin Canning against Michael Wacha. I'd grab this one on the overnights. I'll probably end up liking Canning on Friday in the article. But of course, we'll see how much that line moves in the meantime. Padres and the Pirates. Eric Lauer, Joe Musgrove on Friday. Chris Paddock, Chris Archer Saturday. Joey Lucchesi, Stephen Brault on Sunday. I don't know what's up with Joe Musgrove. The stuff is good. The left on base percentage is not. He's a guy that should be much better than he's been. Could be a first five play there on the Pirates against the Padres on Friday night. Chris Paddock back in the big leagues. The contractual control circumvention by the Padres of, well, we're going to send him down and limit his innings. No, you're going to send him down and avoid his Super 2 status. So he's back up. I'm sure things have dramatically changed with him. And then Stephen Brault on Sunday, the Padres do get a lefty there in that one, so that may be a good opportunity for them. Reds and Brewers here. Tanner Roark, Jimmy Nelson tonight. Sonny Gray, Chase Anderson tomorrow. Luis Castillo, Ulys Chacin Saturday. Anthony DeSclafani, Brandon Woodruff on Sunday. Four of the five previous meetings between these two teams this season have gone under the total. Derek Johnson, of course, the former Milwaukee pitching coach, certainly knows the personnel there for the Brewers, both on the pitching side and on the offensive side. Now he's the Reds pitching coach. Could be some more unders here in this series. But I do wonder on Saturday if it's a good time to fade Luis Castillo. Had the 6 walks against Houston, pitched around it, been kind of a regression guy throughout the season here. Could be a good spot to play an over on Saturday in that Castillo and Chacin matchup. Finally, one more series to take a look at here. The Braves and the Nationals. You've got Dallas Keuchel in his Braves debut on Friday against Steven Strasburg. Mike Foltynewicz, Anibal Sanchez on Saturday. Sanchez was a Brave last season. Then Sunday, Mike Soroka and Patrick Corbin. Intriguing matchups all around. The Nationals offense swinging it very well. I think the Nationals take money in all three games here. They've taken money a lot against lefties. Dallas Keuchel is a lefty. Foltynewicz is a guy that the market doesn't really love. Soroka, we saw that fade of him. Earlier on in the week here, I think we could see Nationals money in all three of these games. I do like the Nationals a little bit from a serious price standpoint. They are playing pretty well right now. Anibal Sanchez, great from a contact management standpoint. Mike Foltynewicz, not so much. Again, there are some concerns that I have about Patrick Corbin, his spin rates, his potential injury situation, but I do think that the Nationals take money in all three games of this series here, and obviously it's a big series for them now that they're making a push in the National League East. As I mentioned, we'll talk with Christian Pina on tomorrow's edition of Bang the Book Radio about this weekend's UFC event. Bettors Box returns on Monday. We'll see if we have some additional content for you as I plan out my week for next week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.